knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. The shadow knows.
Who knows? The Not Just New Movies podcast knows, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Tyler, temporary host for today. For those of you wondering, Ben was called away to an emergency meeting of the League of Magicians or something like that. So he'll be back soon. So I'll be taking over hosting duties temporarily. Today we are going to be talking about The Shadow from 1994, starring Alec Baldwin, two Alec Baldwin movies in a row. And it was directed by Russell Mulcahy, I believe I'm saying that name correctly. If you're just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, which we won't be playing today. I have a different game in mind. Transition to our media consume section, where we talk about what media we've been consuming. Strolling into our review of the week and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or NJNM. Or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. Tonight, graciously joining us is contributing writer, and correct me if I'm wrong here, contributing writer for Reject Nation, Real Vixen, and Cineboobs, and lifelong friend. crossing my fingers on that one. Allison Folklore Loring.
All of that is true.
Okay, good. You like your new nickname?
I do like my new nickname very much.
I try to hand out some nicknames every once in a while.
And you like it. I think it's true and appropriate. So I appreciate it.
Those are the best kinds.
You know, because I am full of folklore, as we all know.
Yeah, so what have you been up to since leaving the Precious Gordon and the Whale?
Oh, the Precious Gordon and the Whale. Well, yes, so I'm over at Film Score Rejects now, doing a weekly column for them all about, you know, movie music, as I'm wont to do, and just writing a ton, I guess. I feel like I write a ton more now than I did before, for whatever reason, but, you know, we did a bunch of Oscar stuff, and I don't know, I feel like every month we have, like, a kind of call to writers where I inevitably jump on, because I'm like, that sounds cool, so then I end up writing about all sorts of fun, crazy stuff.
Yeah, I like your kind of your niche, your little wheel is film soundtracks. And I think you don't really see, you kind of see the articles reporting on movie news and kind of the same stuff every day. But then it's like, well, you get to folklore's writing and you're like, oh, well, it's only, you know, it's kind of a different look at, you know, certain aspects of film, which I always think is really interesting.
Exactly.
You do TV, like the last couple articles I've read of yours were TV soundtracks, which is kind of cool. Like you break down the songs of the week.
Yeah, sometimes I bop around, especially with Real Vixen, because it kind of gives me a little bit more leeway to, because sometimes, you know, you'll be watching a show and I'm like, where could I randomly write about this song? And Real Vixen's a good spot for that.
Right.
But yeah, because I mean, you know, obviously TV has music going on as well. It's a little different than film, but certainly plays into things.
Not less effective, I wouldn't say.
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
Did you get a chance to watch the Oscars last night?
Oh, you know I did. You know I did. And I was...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, no, maybe you should go, because I don't think I'm going to say anything positive.
No, I didn't watch the Oscars. I watched the NBA All-Star game, yeah.
Oh, you made a better choice than I did, apparently. I was bored. I was bored.
Really?
Yeah, I was talking about it with some coworkers today, and I think my highlights were Emma Stone being hilarious and charming, and I have a girl crush on her, so kind of biased, I guess, but I thought she was a highlight. And then Robert Downey Jr. was another highlight. So I just decided the two of them should get together and host next year, if that helps. But at this point, I have so many issues with the whole way people are nominated. And, you know, how many best song nominations did we get? Oh, two.
Because
there's no good music in movies. And then they don't have to perform them.
Right.
Why would you do that? So I was just bitter through the whole show. I was just like, oh yeah, we had to have Billy Crystal, you know, singing a song instead of the Muppets performing. That makes sense.
I tuned in for, because I always kind of try to turn in for the monologue. And
yeah.
He used to do like these little things where he'd like be in the movies and then have all these little skits at the beginning of the show, and then he'd do a monologue.
Yeah.
And what, he sang a song, I guess?
Yeah, he like broke into song, and then he went out to the audience and terrified Martin Scorsese's daughter, and it just got weird quick. we knew where it was going from there.
Well, that's just plain old fun, just scaring yourself.
I mean, normally I'm all about scaring children, but in this context, it just seemed mean.
the next question I was going to ask you, you already kind of mentioned it, was there were two songs nominated, I guess. Were there soundtracks that you really dug this year that they kind of weren't recognized? Do you have like a list somewhere?
I don't have a list, but I can say that my major point of contention, outside of the fact that no real songs were nominated or recognized or performed or anything, when it came to scores, I'm sorry, I'm pretty sure that 2011 was the year of Cliff Martinez, between his score for Contagion and Drive and even The Lincoln Lawyer. Ooh. And no love. But we could nominate John Williams twice for best score, but no Cliff Martinez. Yeah.
He's got the hand in the cookie jar.
I know. So I'm like, oh, God, I can't. Like, obviously, this is not playing to me, but I'm out.
Yeah, Drive soundtrack was really weird, but it was, like, in a good way.
In a good way.
The whole movie was weird and kind of suspenseful, but not like a Hitchcock suspense, but kind of like that. And the movie really, sometimes it was so quiet that it was like, was that me making that noise? Or was this my brain making this noise? Very interesting.
Yeah, his scores are just, you know, they're interesting, but it drives me nuts because everyone's like, well, it was disqualified because, you know, of whatever reason, and yet we nominated and awarded over and over and over again a movie that was inspired by old silent films. Like, it just, I don't get their rules. I don't understand, like, why this is allowed and this isn't, and then music always seems to get the shaft. It just makes me crazy.
It's because they're all pinkos folklore. Like old-timey 50s communism playing a role here.
I keep telling everyone, I'm like, I'm a white chick and I'm too young. Apparently I just do not fit the category. One of my coworkers was saying something today and I'm like, well, you are a white dude, but you're still too young. But, you know, a couple more decades, I think you're going to understand this madness.
Right, yeah. There'll be a show that's made, or there'll be like a movie made as if it was made in the 90s, and the Academy then would be like, this is the greatest film of all time.
This is the best thing ever.
It's like an old Van Damme movie. So yeah, I guess the Oscars, they're touch and go with people. I saw a lot of negative, not negative in a bad way, but just kind of like, is this really what's happening? Kind of comments about the Oscars.
Yeah, it was just lackluster. Like, I mean, obviously I have issues and whatnot about the music because that's what I'm passionate about. It's what I'm focused on. So, of course, I'm not a strong opinion. But unfortunately, even though it's a negative strong opinion, I didn't have a strong opinion about pretty much anything else. I was very apathetic about the rest of it. I mean, even the show, it was whatever the nominations were. What, I mean, I don't know. I was just like, I don't know why I'm so blasé about this entire thing this year.
I think it's because a lot of these movies that they pick, they either come out towards the end of the year or they're not well advertised. I mean, like, The Artist, I heard about it, but it wasn't like, I was going to see, like, Sherlock Holmes in December.
Right, exactly.
And I was going to go see Gone with Amanda Seyfried this weekend. I didn't end up doing that. But, like, movies that are well advertised are what I'm going to go see. And then I see all these movies that I don't know about in the Academy, and I'm like, what movies are you watching?
Exactly. I mean, they play to such a... It's not a bad thing, but they play to such a small crowd. And, you know, even I've seen the majority of those films just because of what I do, writing and whatnot. But even still, I'm like, they didn't blow me away. It's not like these amazing movies happened that you guys just didn't know about. I mean, they were okay. They weren't, you know, amazing.
I like Tintin. I went and saw Tintin too.
Fun. Yeah. Tintin was fun. I enjoyed Tintin.
I really enjoyed The Muppets, so I'm glad it won that best song out of the two. 50-50 chance.
I know that arm wrestling match. Wasn't sure which way it was going to go. I would have probably lit something on fire if they were like, and Rio wins the Oscar.
Yeah.
That would have just been it.
Yeah, it would have been pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I guess we can move on from that if you've said your piece.
I think I've said my piece.
Media consumed. We usually talk about things we've done. Possibly movies we've seen, TV shows we've been watching, books we've been reading, let's say country constitutions we've been drafting. I don't know. There's a lot of nations in unrest. So maybe you've been, reaching out Rousseauian style to draft a country's constitution. Lauren, what have you been up to? What have you been watching?
What have I know I was thinking about this. As far as movies, ironically, I think the only film I saw last week outside of The Shadow, which I know we will talk about, was Wanderlust.
Okay.
the lovely Jennifer Aniston and the hilarious Paul Rudd, which, man, I don't want to say that I disliked the film, because that wasn't how I felt when I walked out of it, but I didn't particularly like it, which, again, I guess is kind of how I felt about the Oscars. And I'm getting a little worried that I'm getting very apathetic about film lately. But I mean, it just wasn't as funny. I mean, I didn't really expect it to be hilarious. I knew it would probably be one of those films where all the jokes were in the trailer.
Right.
It kind of proved to be true. And I do love Paul Rudd, but I didn't totally buy the chemistry between him and Jennifer Aniston's character. And plus, I went and saw it with Kate Erbland, who also writes for Film School, as well as many, many other publications at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And she made a very good point where she was saying that Jennifer Aniston's character started becoming less and less likable the way she was behaving as the movie went on, and it started making Paul Rudd's character's choices less believable, and that became an issue for her. And I agreed with that, where you just kind of started thinking, this is a very outlandish and kind of ridiculous situation they've gotten themselves into, mm-hmm. but now it's not grounded in anything, and it almost feels just completely off the rails, and it's not technically funny anymore. There were a couple of, you know, funnier moments with Ken Marino, but other than that, nah.
Yeah, there was a lot of Children's Hospital, I think, in there, wasn't
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet either, but I know the girl from Watchmen's in it. Can't remember her name right now, because I don't prepare for this.
Well, you didn't know I was going to pick up Wanderlust.
Yeah, Ken Marino, he's in Children's Hospital, too. He's real funny.
He is. He's hilarious. And Party Down, R.I.P.
Of course. Of course. I think that, weren't they talking about a Party Down movie?
They were, and I have my fingers crossed that that's true. But I feel like it's the Arrested Development movie scenario where we'll always hear about it and it'll never happen.
But that's actually happening now, so don't lose
faith. That's true. That's true. So fingers.
I like Megan Mullally over Ostrich Woman from Glee.
Not a fan?
No, just don't think she's funny.
Oh, definitely. You watched her in Party Down, though. She's kind of hilarious on that show.
She's kind of uncomfortably funny.
That's true. Megan Mullally's character was definitely, out of the two, I prefer.
She was like, yeah, Megan Mullally was kind of like, oh, well, at least you're happy, you know.
Was naively goofy, whereas Jane was a little bit like off her rocker goofy, where she was just like not in the same sphere as anyone else.
Although I will laugh whenever Jane Lynch goes into like that, well, let me tell you something, and then she comes out with this ridiculous story. She, like, leans in and tells you something like an old yes. cowboy would do or something.
Yeah, she'd always be giving that Kyle Kidd advice, and I'd be like, this is terrible advice, and he's taking it. He's like, this is a great idea. I'm like, oh, God.
That show's awesome.
So great.
So Wanderlust, is that a go-see in theaters? Is that a wait for DVD, or is it just kind of an ignore?
I think it's a wait for it to be on cable if you're bored one afternoon and want something on in the background.
Doing laundry movie. I like
doing laundry movie, exactly. That's where it was all for me.
Nice.
I'm trying to think. I mean, the Oscars, and other than that, I think I was kind of lame on the movie front, and I haven't unfortunately seen any live music in a while, which is not usual for me, but it's early in the year. Other than that, I've been watching a bunch of really, really bad TV. I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, bad TV. Like, girl, bad TV. Like, why do I keep watching Gossip Girl and Revenge, and I'm obsessed with it, and I can't stop watching this soap opera television?
Hold up. I'm a huge Revenge fan.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
Revenge
8,
as I like to call it, me and Joe.
Yes. I mean, it is so ludicrous. It's amazing. It's so good. And a, like, trailer or whatnot came on for it in the middle of the Oscars because it was on ABC. And, of course, everyone at the party I was at was like, what is this nonsense? And I was like, shut up, you guys. This is the best show on television. You don't even know.
Spoiler alert for everybody who's going to plan on watching Revenge, because I'm about to spoil the hell out of this.
Do it. Do it. Sorry, guys.
So, okay. So the first episode starts with them at the beach party at 4th of
yes.
July. And I go, okay.
No, it's not 4th of July. It's their engagement party, Fire and Ice.
Okay. Okay, yeah. True.
I'm sorry.
Correct. No, you're correct, because in the first episode, I was like, oh, must be 4th of July,
yeah.
There's fireworks.
It is confusing because there's fireworks. Agreed.
Now, I was like, okay, well, obviously, this is just like going to be just like a movie where they start at the ending, they start at the conclusion, and then move on from there.
Okay.
Well, now they're at the point where they've already gone back to that first episode happening, and it's all kind of solved for, and there's new episodes coming. Now, I understand that being like a season finale kind of thing. And I just have no idea where it's going to go, and I kind of don't like that, because the whole season was good because it was building up to this one point.
Right.
And now that that's over, you're just kind of like, well, they have nothing left. I mean, the only thing left
the way they ended it was a good enough twist that if they had just done it by the numbers as you thought you were seeing in the pilot, you would have been like, okay, so now what? We know that this all happened and we always knew it was going to.
Right.
They did enough of a good twist, and I did cheat a little bit today. I think Cinema Blend had posted some like preview clips of this week's episode, and I couldn't help myself. I normally don't watch because I want to like watch the whole thing, but I was like, I have to know. And, you know, with one of the main characters whom, not to spoil anything, but in the pilot, they kill him, so you basically go back and think he's going to die this entire time. Now he's not dead, potentially being suspected as murder of someone who did die.
Right.
I thought that was kind of a good twist, because I didn't necessarily want his character to go, because I thought his character was getting kind of interesting. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was, and this is just kind of my idea now that we're talking about it, is the writers were like, okay, yeah, we're probably going to get canceled after like a couple episodes. So
right.
They had one idea in mind, and then they're like, everyone's like, we love revenge. We're going to renew you for 3 seasons.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, crap. Now we're going to have to write more.
Exactly. They're like, oh, crap. Let me think of a better plot.
Yeah, but I kind of agree with you. I guess they could take a whole number of directions. But I'm getting to the point now. I don't think it needs to be like a multiple season kind of show. I think 2 seasons, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, because the whole other question will be, what happens when summer ends? And I feel like they're getting towards the end of summer. And I know they'll probably be like, we'll leave the Hamptons, we'll go into Manhattan. But it's
right.
just so ingrained in the Hamptons. Like, that's such a part of the lunacy of that show. Like, going to the boathouse restaurant and just hopping on sailboats. And
yeah.
It just makes it all just so much more ridiculous that if they move it into New York, it's just going to become compared to, like, Gossip Girl or any of those other shows based in Manhattan. So I don't know how they're going to do it over many seasons, but for as, you know, silly a concept as it seemed when it first showed, it has impressed me every week where I'm just like, why is this actually keeping me coming back to keep watching this show?
It reminds me of when the Saved by the Bell gang went to the beach to work for that summer.
Yes.
It's like, oh, well, all this stuff doesn't really matter once they get back to school. It's just kind of
exactly.
like a non-continuous
and remember
part.
They all came back to school and pretended like it didn't really happen.
Yeah.
Like, Zach fell in love and broke up with his girlfriend, and he's back at school, and he's back in love with Kelly. And I'm like, wait a second.
That's how the world works in TV.
Exactly. I mean, the Saved by the Bell timelines on their relationships always cracked me up, because I'd be like, wow, you guys get over it. Like, he'd be devastated for one episode, and then the next day he'd be over it. I'm like,
right.
This is hilarious.
Yeah, I always have trouble, because, like, for some reason, Kelly left for a while, and then like goes the girl in a leather jacket.
Right.
And I was like, who the hell is this?
I hated that girl.
And then they went to college, and Kelly was back, and I was like, what the hell?
I know. None of it made sense.
It's kind of confusing. Anyway.
It was very confusing. But anyway, people should watch Revenge. Simply watch Madeline Stowe, because her performance is unbelievable. I mean, she's batshit insane, and she chews the scenery, but it's amazing. It's so worth watching. I mean, it's pure entertainment. It's just amazing.
She plays Victoria Grayson, right?
She does. She plays Victoria Grayson, the matriarch and puppet master.
Oh, man.
Good stuff.
Revenge 8 is pretty ludicrous. Although
it's just so insane.
What was the other trashy piece of television?
Oh, Gossip Girl.
I don't watch that.
I know. You should. I mean, no, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Watch whatever you want to watch.
Is that with Chuck Bass?
It is with Chuck Bass.
Oh, Chuck Bass tucks through his nose.
I know.
Nice.
They're all insane. And like, they've got, one of my friends has just started watching it, and she's kind of jumping in, and she's like, wait, so what? And when I start explaining how they got the place they're at, she's like, Allison, I'm like, I know. It just, you have to let any sense of reality or like sense just go, because this is just, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense.
The show's been on for a while too, hasn't it?
It has. I think that's part of its problem. It doesn't know who to pair who with who. Like, they keep trying to put the step-siblings back together, and it's getting a little, like, Kentucky. I'm like, you guys, stop. They're technically related. It's weird.
Incestuous.
Yeah. I'm like, you don't want to go down this road.
Nice. Do you care if I move on?
No, please, no.
Okay. Well, you mentioned people seeing in concert. This weekend, I'm actually going to see the Goo Goo Dolls in concert.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'll be damned if Iris didn't get me through like 6th and 7th grade back in the day.
I mean, yeah, come on. They were integral in the 90s, let's be honest.
I didn't want the world to see me.
Of course not.
Up in my tower. So I might report on that next week.
Please do. Oh, I'm tuning in about that report. That sounds amazing.
Talking about Alec Baldwin today in The Shadow, he does a podcast. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's like 20 minutes an episode, so it's like an easy, like if you drive anywhere for 20 minutes to like work or something.
Yeah.
I've only checked out a few episodes, but he's got like a jazzy kind of New York centric podcast on, I had all the information here, but I'm going to link to it in the article below. It's called Here's the Thing, and he interviews people that he wants to talk to. I think one of the episodes he interviewed Lorne Michaels.
Oh, okay.
And it's just kind of like his thing.
I like it.
So he comes on, he interviews people, and you get to hear Alec Baldwin's voice, and for 20 minutes talking about whatever the hell he wants to talk about. So I really wanted him to be on the show just to talk about The Shadow, but hopefully maybe someday, Here's the Thing, we'll talk about The Shadow and Beetlejuice and all the movies we love that star Alec Baldwin.
I think that's a great idea. He's awesome. A good theme to go after.
I even asked Ben, I was like, do you think we could get Alec Baldwin on? And Ben was like, I don't think so. And then I was like, okay, what if we could record an interview with him and then put it on the show? He's like, I don't think so. So I had this whole interview ready just in case.
Oh.
So it's just sitting there collecting dust. But someday I think I'll have that interview ready.
I was going to say, don't let that dream die. It could happen.
Yeah, it talks about, you know, there's a lot of shadow-centric questions, which I don't think people want to ask, but I'm not afraid to ask those questions.
Listen, these are the hard-hitting questions that people want to know but are afraid to ask. So, right. Tyler, I think you should pursue this dream and ask these questions.
I appreciate your support.
I do support you on this.
Speaking of shadows, and lastly, The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, a video game I've played this week. Twilight Shadows, get it? Transition?
I like it.
I don't have a problem with this game. I think it's one of the greatest in the series. You probably don't know what I'm talking about, Folklore. Do you at all?
I mean, I know about Zelda. I had a younger brother. It rings some bells on the video game front. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a new game out. This is the one before that one. So fairly recent, 2006.
Got it. Okay.
Played it, beat it recently. You know, I really enjoyed it.
Hey, there you go.
Hey, that's all I got to say. I wrote an article recently unnecessarily critiquing a Zelda timeline that came out at the end of last year. If you're a fan of Geek Tyrant or Game Tyrant, they came out and talked about this timeline. And I found kind of a mistake, what I think is a mistake, and so I attack the whole timeline. I say the whole thing's bogus because one thing's off, I think.
Okay.
So I wrote an article about it. People listening can go and tell me that I'm wrong, tell me what I'm missing, because I love that, even though I may not recognize you as someone who actually proved me wrong. But I do appreciate feedback. It's at the Sentinel, but I'm hoping to have it published at Game Tyrant, so like more than two people actually read it.
Nice.
So yeah, there's that. Seek that out. Have fun with that. But that's the end of my media consume section.
All right.
And, you know, talking about shadows again, I can't wait till we start talking about the Shadow, which is right now.
He was consumed by evil.
For as long as you can remember, you've struggled against your own black heart.
Shoot through him.
Every man pays a price for redemption.
I'm not looking for redemption.
You have no choice. But I'll teach you to use your black shadow to fight evil.
He became the Shadow.
I didn't see anything. I swear.
Dump him.
Who's there?
Did you think you'd get away with it? Did you think I wouldn't know?
Now, when the world is in danger,
report. Police investigation of murder. Agent advises inquiry.
Who knows what powers stir in the night?
Whatever you did, it's in the past.
Join me. Inside you beats a heart of darkness.
I do what I do to fight back the evil inside me, but some part of it is still there, waiting.
Genghis Khan conquered half of the world in his lifetime. I intend to finish the job.
And when the adventure begins,
activate the bomb.
Who knows where it will end? Alec Baldwin, John Lone, Penelope Ann Miller, and Tim Curry. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow.
All right, The Shadow, made in 1994, stars Alec Baldwin, directed by Russell McKahee. I believe that's how you say that Sounds like an Irish name, Mulcahy. Could be wrong. I don't know. I'm only a fourth Irish. And it's based off of these old radio shows they used to have in like the 30s and 40s, back when radio was the medium. And I think there were some pulp comics before that, as opposed to like the Green Hornet, which I think came straight out of radio. I think the Shadow was around in like the 20s, early 30s, with pulp comics like Conan the Barbarian and stuff like that, Robert E. Howard boxing literature. So we're talking like 80 years old. And for a movie that talks about a character that at that time was let's say 60 years old, I don't know, Allison, it was like they tried to make it almost kind of modern, but it stuck in the 40s. Like that was the kind of setting they had. But like, let's just start at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really weird because he starts out as like, what, an opium baron or something?
Oh, yeah, some sort of drugged out hippie someone hanging out with the long hair and the purple fingernails, which really caught my attention, got me into the movie immediately.
Absolutely. But you're like, you're kind of like, how is this going to play into The Shadow, the movie?
Right, exactly.
And I think it asks more questions than gives answers, because you're like, okay, we know he becomes the Shadow, but where does he come from to become this opium lord in like Thailand or wherever he's at?
Exactly.
I think it's the greater question. So
yeah, I mean, it was a weird opening. I mean, I guess they tie it back together towards the end, but it was a strange opening for sure. I think I started watching it and I freaked out and I was like, I'm watching the wrong movie. And I'm like, no, I'm not. What's happening?
Yeah. It was, although it was nice though, because it gave like a Nolan, what we know as is a Nolan origin story in like 5-10 minutes.
Yes, that is true.
As opposed to like Batman Begins, where it takes like an hour and 45 minutes to establish why Batman became Batman. Well,
exactly.
In this movie, it's like 5 minutes saying, well, there was this guy, then he got these powers, now he's the Shadow. Boom.
Right.
You're in the movie. So I did appreciate that. And I think that's how the 90s worked, especially with those kinds of weird comic book movies like the Ninja Turtles. It was like, you know, we didn't need to know kind of the whole span leading up to them getting under the ooze and then growing up. It was like Splinter's flashback where he's just like, yeah, I was a rat, then I mutated, then the turtles mutated, and now we're the Ninja Turtles. It's like, okay,
that's
cool.
So true. They were a lot more shorthanded back in the 90s. We've gotten a lot more verbose now. We like to drag it out, tell you every like little last detail.
We like those smoldering characters that have like all this pent-up regret or whatever.
Exactly.
So he starts out as like this opium baron, and then for some reason he's arrested by these guys and he's brought to, I don't know, the king of martial arts or the king of mind readers, well, I don't know, in a temple that is covered in clouds that I guess no one has ever seen before, because the clouds
exactly.
Have been there.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, hey, what's up? And this guy's like, yo, here's this knife. And he throws this knife at him, and the guy, and Alec Baldwin, what was his name?
His name was Lamont Cranston.
Lamont Cranston, thank you.
Oh, but I think he did have a different name when he was the opium den.
Oh, yeah.
Board, and I don't remember what it was. And I'll probably say something racist and terrible if I try to make it up.
It's okay to be racist on this show. yeah, and the guy calls him Lamont Cranston. And the guy's like, you know my real name? It's like,
that,
wait.
Yeah.
What's your real name here?
How many real names do you have? Yeah.
So he fights with the knife, and then something happens where he...
Oh, wait, you're brushing over this, Tyler. He fights with the knife because the knife itself is somehow alive and, like, can yell and has a little face and, like, scary little demon teeth, and it's quite terrifying, but I feel like also inadvertently hilarious.
Yeah, it was like an Evil Dead moment, or...
Yeah.
Any type of weird horror movie where all of a sudden, like, things are moving and coming alive.
Exactly. It felt like Beetlejuice, where you're kind of like, what's going on?
Exactly. Yeah, that is true. I did skip over that part.
Sorry, I just wanted to point that out, because that part was entertaining me the entire movie, where, like, that little knife would show up, and I'd be like, oh, here's the supporting character.
If you think about it, though, like, 94, that was pretty cool, whatever CGI, I don't know if it was CGI or animation or whatever, but it looked fairly prominent for such early 90s movie.
I actually made some notes on the fact that the effects in this film, as you know, obviously when looking at it now compared to what we have, look, you know, not as impressive, but considering when this movie came out, I was rather impressed, thinking, you know, this is how they were able to make everything happen.
Yeah, well, no, I totally agree, because I wrote down here, our backdrop's more beautiful than we give them credit for, you know.
Yeah.
I and I'm serious, you know, like you see like a backdrop city, you know,
right.
It's not a real city, but it looks almost like it's real. Well, you mean, right. You have CGI now where it's like, well, that looks really real, but I also know it's not real. It's kind of, I don't know, just the way movies were made, I guess, kind of. Again, we always come back to this idea of nostalgia, but again,
yeah.
I think just kind of the artwork that goes into this kind of stuff is you appreciate the movie more because of that. Like if you look at Dick Tracy, if you
mm-hmm.
go back and watch that, like a lot of it is like beautiful backdrops and cityscapes and things like that, where they could be standing in front of a green screen or whatever, or maybe actually on a lot. And
right.
It's just kind of like, wow, this is a really cool looking movie.
It's true, because sometimes when you think that they actually had to make it practically work and
yeah.
how they probably had to cheat or do, you know, quote unquote movie magic rather than just doing a green screen and going into, you know, whatever Imaginarium place and
right.
having them do everything CGI, they actually, you know, how are we going to have a weird little knife that flies at you and like screeches and tries to bite you when
yeah.
we can't just CGI that on there? You know, that to me is almost more interesting. Where you're kind of like, I don't know how they did that.
Yeah, it adds a whole nother couple levels to the movie.
It's true. And I just want to bring up really quick, one of my favorite shots that struck me, and I was like, I have to write this down, was one of the overhead shots when one of our other protagonists, who I don't want to give away or jump too far ahead in the plot, but
right.
he has come to New York, and he's kind of, you know, the Shadow's nemesis or whatnot. And there's this overhead shot where you think you're just looking at this very intricate flooring, and all of a sudden it starts moving.
Oh,
and I remember
yeah.
thinking, like, how the heck did they do? Because it looks so practical. So I'm like, how did they do this? And then you realize as they, like, start to pan down that it's the guy standing up, and he's wearing this intricate cloak or
right.
coat or something. And so when he stands up, the little panels start to like lift with him. And that's what's doing that crazy effect just from him standing
yeah.
up wearing this piece of clothing. And I'm like, this is the kind of stuff we're missing now, is that they probably had to think, we'll design it this way and shoot it this way and have all this around it.
Yeah.
It was just so cool because it was so simple. He was just standing up and it just happened to blend in with his surroundings with the way it was being shot and the angle you were looking at it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this movie is full of cool visual effects, cool camera work. Definitely agree.
True.
We can release, though, who that other protagonist or the main antagonist was, Genghis Khan's official descendant. But, yeah, it just kind of, I don't want to go through the entire plot, but.
I was going to say, just go with it. Trust
yeah.
that makes sense. It
so Alec Baldwin's
the
Shadow now.
Stuff.
It doesn't matter how we get there. It's the
no.
It's not where we're going. It's how we get there.
Exactly.
So Alec Baldwin's the Shadow, and he's got, like, I thought it was really cool. I'll talk about this in a second. And somebody mails the coffin of a still alive guy to a museum. You have to watch this movie, first of all, just to understand what I'm trying to say. I really hope most of our listeners watch the movies before we talk about it, because some of these episodes are kind of useless if you don't watch the movie. That's
exactly.
why we usually don't go into too much detail. But they mail this coffin, and it was kind of a cool scene because you're dealing with, like, inept security guards, which is always
right.
funny. But it's, like, Genghis Khan's descendant who's now up against the Shadow. I'm like, okay, I get it. But then there's also this other plot with the bomb
right.
and, like, nuclear fission and Ian McKellen playing Margot Lane's...
Lane.
Yeah, Margot Lane's dad. And then Tim Curry's playing, like, the renegade scientist that works against... Ian McKellen's scientist character.
Yeah.
Let me just say right now, like, some of my favorite people are in this movie.
It has an amazing cast, honestly. Really,
and I don't think
does.
It gets enough credit for that.
I mean, like, Alec Baldwin's little cab driver, like,
yeah.
you know.
Frank Boyle.
Is Peter Boyle. Like,
or Peter
serious?
Boyle, excuse
yeah.
me, yeah.
Peter Boyle, like, come on. It's too good.
Tim Curry's obviously a great addition.
Great.
Ian McKellen,
I mean,
Gandalf, also a great
yep,
addition.
Yep.
Who else was in it? Oh, the dad from Alf was
yes.
at the museum. Willie!
Oh, God. And then, of course, you know, Penelope Ann Miller was the female lead, and she's yeah. getting all sorts of notoriety for another little film called The Artist, which is kind of nostalgic.
Was that her?
Yeah, you know.
I actually didn't know that, so thank you.
You're welcome.
not the cinephile I put myself out to be.
Oh,
I'm accused of being obsessed with films. I'm like, yeah, you know, whatever. I talk about them for an hour a week.
Obsessed with certain films, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, this movie has a lot of people. And it's weird. And each one of them is enjoyable. It's like a lot of times you see like these, I don't want to say all stars because they're not all stars, like the all stars of like the B or C list.
Right.
But a lot of times you see these kind of forced cameos and you're like, oh, that was stupid because they don't know their lines. It was just kind of foreign. But all of these characters that are kind of played by some of my favorite people, you know, they're all fun to watch. Like every scene's almost fun to enjoy because it's either you have Alec Baldwin acting ridiculous, you have Peter Boyle making jokes. Like the one scene where they're standing outside the hotel and the hotel's not visible yet.
Right.
And the cab driver, Mo, he's talking to Margo and he says, you know what I love about this job? The excitement. And like nothing's going on. They're just standing in the rain.
Nothing's happening.
And the shadow is just running shit in this hotel. No one knows what's going on. It's just kind of a funny movie. There are very light comedic moments where it's, again, it's not like a Nolan film where everything is like super serious. I mean, there are some serious tones, but it's like they realize that, one, it's over the top, and that you're supposed to be having fun at the movies, and so not everything has to be super serious. I mean, you're fighting Genghis Khan's descendant. Like, it's understood.
With a talking knife.
It's understood that this is retarded. But
it's insane.
They can present a movie that you can have fun with, which really give it credit.
I was going to bring that up. They do a good job of, you know, kind of writing that line of not being so campy that it's just absolutely ridiculous, but not taking itself so seriously that you're like, really? Come on. Like, think about the story you're attempting to tell. So I was actually impressed by that. I wasn't sure, you know, what tone it was going to take, but it worked out. It was a good mix of, you know, you'd be like, oh, this is a very intense moment. And then you start cracking up because even with the, you know, the talking knife and the crazy coffin that the guy shows up in, there was always like a slight little hint of tongue in cheek that you always felt like, this is happening. Can you believe it? And it kind of worked to have you be like, yeah, let's just go on this crazy ride. It's just nuts.
And I think a lot of it is Alec Baldwin because just the way he can switch back and forth between like super smoldering and bothered until to like a lighthearted character where they're in a, when he's talking to Margot Lane after she had woken up in the morning and is
I was just thinking of this scene. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I dreamed about being naked on the beach, this, that, and the other thing. And Alec Baldwin, Lamont Cranston's like, I dreamed about ripping my own face off, and Genghis Khan's descendant was underneath, and she's like, you have some problems. He's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. It was, that moment was brilliant. I love that. Yeah, it was definitely a highlight.
What was I going to say about the movie? Oh, let's just talk about Alec Baldwin for a second.
Yeah, please, let's.
So he plays the Shadow, which is fine, and when he is the Shadow, he has this really great voiceover work that he does. Where he, like, laughs, but then he tries to be, like, evil to scare these villains. And you know it's Jack Donaghy the whole time. And it kind of – it's not in a bad way, but it's kind of – you laugh at it. You kind of smile and chuckle because it's like, that's Alec Baldwin trying to intimidate somebody. Exactly. When every week I watch him on 30 Rock and laugh my ass off because he's funny, but he's, you know, he's trying to deliver these dry lines. What were your thoughts on Alec Baldwin?
I mean, he is brilliant at playing very serious, smoldering, like, you know, get you in the moment, and then taking the air out of his own sail and just kind of like making a joke at himself and just like throwing you off and you being like, oh my God, of course. I mean, yeah, it is ludicrous and he knows it. And it's so brilliant the way he does that. But one of my favorite parts of him being the Shadow, you know, with the voiceover and the booming and the laughing and, you know, all that, is that he would not only have, you know, the hat and have a scarf that covered his mouth, but to help further disguise, he had this weird prosthetic nose that immediately made him look like his brother Billy Baldwin. And I kid you not, the first time he showed up as the Shadow, I was like, oh my God, they got Billy Baldwin to play him as the Shadow. This is fucked up. Alec Baldwin gets no credit. No, dude. He looked exactly like his brother with that nose, which I don't know if that's a dig at Billy. I'm sorry if it is, but it cracked me up every time he had that damn nose on. And like Peter Boyle would look in the, you know, rear view mirror and see him shout it out. He'd be like, oh man, here we go. It was too good.
Yeah, he has like the bushy eyebrows too, along with the nose. And it I mean, I understand that like the scarf could be enough, but no. Nose, eyebrows, I need to further hide my identity. It makes
sense. The whole thing, it killed me. I was like, this is so brilliant, because now it's almost so layered that you're like, wait, what is this disguise he's wearing? And this is intimidating, why?
He can make himself invisible. Why does he need all
exactly like why
extra disguises?
Whole insane story going on. Like, what is going on here?
I think, I don't know. I went and looked at the old literature, and they did do a really good job of making the Shadow in character look like the Shadow from the cover of the books.
I kind of got that when they finally did like the outline towards the end, and I was like, all right, they're trying to emulate this look. But the whole, like the first time it went down, I was like, is this like a weird nod to Steve Martin and Roxanne? Like, what is happening right now?
That was pretty ridiculous, because you can see Alec Baldwin and you know that all that stuff is fake, and it's just kind of it's just kind of laugh worthy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like you were saying, like we've been saying the whole time, like taking the wind out of his own sails, like he can deliver these like, sometimes they feel almost cheesy where he's like, oh, look at me, I'm the important actor and I can say all these lines real prominently. But then he goes and says something dumb or knocks his own character and you're like, you know, this guy's all right. He knows that he's supposed to be doing this and then that he can laugh at himself. And I think Baldwin in real life is like that. So it transitions well that I always like the idea that the people that play characters on film, if they're like that in real life, too, like I just love them to death.
Exactly. I mean,
because you're not lying to me in film.
Exactly. Like, if you don't take yourself too seriously, it always seems to just work better for you. I think that's why he's had the career he's had. I mean, mm-hmm. he constantly says, you know, jokingly, you know, now I'm a television star, an actor. And so, you know, he gets it. He gets what people are probably saying and he plays right into it instead of pretending like I don't hear it or I'm above it. And I think, you know, it's always been a part of his personality. It works so well. And it's hilarious. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's funny watching him so young too, especially in a 30 Rock. And every time I saw him and with like his slick black hair or whatever, I think of that one episode where, for some reason Jack Donaghy's walking through the set and the cameras are supposed to make people look real young or something. I don't know if you remember what episode I'm talking about. And so he passes by one of the cameras and you see kind of what's on camera and you see this young Alec Baldwin walk by. And you're like, holy shit, I forgot he used to look like that.
I forgot he looked like that. It's so true. I mean, he's an attractive man now, but he really was. I mean,
he was the bee's knees back in the 90s, I'll tell you that.
I'm just saying.
After Hunt for Red October, man. I think that was, I can't really find him in any more real serious roles. I mean, I saw the Hunt for Red October a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that being too, like, ha-ha funny. And then he was in, like, Glengarry Glen Ross for, like, 16 minutes or whatever his big speech was. But, like, he was in, like, Beetlejuice and this and a couple other movies. But, yeah, I mean, I really like him as an actor. I like him as a TV star. I like him in real life. He can be somewhat preachy politically.
Yeah.
Which I don't really like because, you know, regardless of whether I agree with him or not, it's just kind of like, well, you know, you're just asking for a fight if you just throw accusations out the, out that way. But other than that, I mean, he's a funny guy, and I really like him in this film. I wish they would have made more.
I know.
Think about you make like 4 Batmans in the 90s, but you can't make any more Shadows. What's
exactly
up?
Exactly. Maybe we could bring it back. We'll get Penelope Ann Miller back in there and Ian McKellen.
It would obviously be a sequel because we already had that origin story in that 5 minutes in the first film.
Exactly, exactly. We can just press forward from here. See where everyone's at.
I wrote this comic book once called December Fire 83, and I had this plot where a crazy Asian person builds a bomb to blow up the whole city. And then I watched The Shadow, and I'm like, oh, man, this is exactly where I subconsciously got my ideas from.
Right.
So I apologize to the makers of The Shadow for stealing their pivotal plot line. Like, as far as what happened there, like, as far as the kind of the antagonistic plot, obviously we're dealing with an over-the-top movie here, but was it something that kept you intrigued? Was it something that kind of kept you guessing? Was it something you were interested in? What were your thoughts on that?
When you suggested that we were going to watch this movie, I was like, oh gosh, I don't know if I'm going to care or have anything interesting to say about it. Cause I mean, I am not a huge comic book person and, you know, whatnot. But then I saw Alec Baldwin was in it and I was like, I'm pretty much sold. Pretty much will watch anything that he's in.
Plus
and
a chance to talk to me, right?
Exactly. Obviously, I was like, I'll watch anything, Tyler. It's okay.
Just stoke the ego a little bit.
you know. But I really did enjoy it. You know, I watched it after the Oscars last night, and I was worried. I'm like, oh man, I just watched, you know, 4 hours of really boring, nothing about film. Sorry again to the Oscars. I don't know, you know, another 2 hours if I'm going to stay awake for this. And I was engaged. Like, you know, it was kind of weird at the beginning, but then it worked that little weirdness in. And then it was just fun to watch. I was kind of like, I want to know where this is all going to go. I mean, it kept a good pace. It, you know, kept things moving. It had moments of, you know, little tongue-in-cheek funny. It had action. I thought it was a good mix. I was, you know, considering everyone who's in it, I mean, it was fun. I would recommend it if you just want a fun, silly movie to watch.
Oh yeah,
this is a fun one.
It's definitely a watch. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned comic books, and this was another question I had written down. I don't know, you're a big like a superhero movie fan. Do you go out and watch all those?
I do. And I'm not like hugely well versed in superheroes. Like, I mean, I'll go watch them and I'm almost a blank slate where I'm like maybe one of the best people to go see it because I'm not bringing anything to it. Like, I don't know anything about the comics or anything that's happened prior. But I do like the summer blockbuster action-y films. I mean, I don't know if, you know, that's not my demographic or whatnot, but I get into that. Like, I think that that's hilarious. I mean, Top Gun will always be one of my favorite movies. It falls right into that whole insane action, crazy, you know, protagonists or whatnot. But I do get into the superheroes. I mean, I think it's a cool concept. You know, I think they're doing cool things with them now. So yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I know a little bit. I have a younger brother, so I know along the way I picked up bits and pieces of who people were. But other than that, but yeah, you know, I'll go see the Avengers movie, which I'm excited for, because I got all sucked into the superhero thing with Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr. I was like, this is hilarious. If this is how they are, I'm in every time.
And I think that was something I wanted to bring up earlier. And my question was, how does The Shadow measure up to the modern superhero movies that we talk about today?
You know, kind of
this post-9/11, post-Nolan world that we live in where everything's cynical, everything's shadowy, everything's kind of conspiratorial. And those Marvel examples, like I was going to say, like last year, what was last year? 2011?
Yes.
Captain America. I really enjoyed Captain America. Not only was it like a superhero movie, but it was also kind of tongue-in-cheek, just like The Shadow.
Exactly.
Thor was also, again, kind of dealing with these epic storylines, but also it's like, hey, people, it's a comic book. Like,
exactly.
You can laugh at it, too.
I think that's so necessary because comic books are meant to be a little bit silly. I mean, they're not technically, I don't think, comic books, I mean, maybe they were always intended to be brought to film or whatnot, but they're supposed to be these like really cool drawings and these crazy scenarios of people with these crazy superpowers. So, I mean, they are outlandish. So like the film versions should be that way. And I do like the way that Nolan has kind of taken on the Batman franchise and made it very serious and very dark. And I think that's a cool take, but I really do enjoy just going and watching, you know, Thor be totally crazy and then like, you know, break every plate in a diner and have everyone be like, what are you doing? And he's like, I don't know. Like, that's hilarious because that's exactly how it would be if you took an outlandish superhero and tried to put them into like modern day life.
Yeah, or cite the greatest superhero movie of all time with Batman Forever.
Yes.
Val Kilmer as Bruce Wayne, Jim Carrey as the Riddler, Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. I mean, it has all of the... I constantly promote Batman Forever as one of the best movies of all time. Am I joking? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I kind of also had like the sub question was like, could a movie like The Shadow exist today? And I think it can because we have successful movies like Captain America, Iron Man, Thor. I mean, the DC side, we have like Green Lantern, which kind of bombed because, I don't know, maybe the CGI effects were a little too much.
Themselves too seriously. I can say,
but then you look at the Batman franchise and you're like, people are just like tearing themselves apart to see like 2 seconds of a teaser poster or something like that.
Yeah,
but
I think the Green Lantern just missed the mark. Like, I think superhero movies maybe are something where you really just have to not pick a line or pick a side, but it is a certain genre that you have to approach a certain way. And either you're going to be outlandish and funny like Iron Man or Captain America, or you're going to be very serious and kind of take a whole different stance on it like Nolan has been doing. And Green Lantern seemed to not quite hit those marks. I know it wanted to, and I love Ryan Reynolds. I think he is a really good comedic actor, but I think he was surrounded by a cast of people who are taking it so incredibly seriously in a way that it just never worked. Like, he was trying to kind of chew scenery sometimes, and no one else really was, and it always just felt off balance, and I think that's why it didn't work that well. Whereas with these other two, everyone's on board with which tone they're going to go with, and that's how it works, and that's what you have to do.
Yeah, and I also think Green Lantern, especially with kind of a I don't want to say he's complex, but Green Lantern, there's a lot of stuff that backs up Green Lantern. And when you try to do too much, I think the movie suffers because of that. Exactly. So, like, simple ones like Captain America, like The Shadow.
Yeah.
Where they're like, okay, here's the superhero and here's one adventure. I think those are more successful. And I think that's where The Shadow kind of shines, where it's like, you know, it didn't really make way for a sequel. It didn't really have anything coming in. It was just like, here's how The Shadow started. Here's a fight with Genghis Khan's descendant.
Right.
There's the possibility of, you know, nuclear destruction or whatever, and everything works out, and then we might have a sequel with another Shadow if you like this movie enough. And I think that's where, again, you know, not only does the comedy add to its awesomeness, but Alec Baldwin, the supporting cast, and kind of its simplicity and its tongue-in-cheekness, it makes it a, you know, I want to say pretty good film from the 90s.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's a simple story, and I think that that's how it should be for films like this. I mean, you're not going to have layered. I mean, you can, but for things like this, you shouldn't. It shouldn't be super layered and a lot of things going on, a lot of backstory and whatnot. It just should be, you know, he was an opium den lord, and now he's not. Now he's got his weird brother's nose, and that's what's happening. And people can't see buildings in this town because everyone's hypnotized. Like,
is Billy the weird one? I thought Danny was the weird one.
Yeah. You're right. Well, there's so many of them.
Is he the cocaine real estate agent?
That's right.
Did you have any last notes that you wanted to bring up? I have a couple that I'll bring up, and then we can close it out.
Not really. I think I hit all my points. But, yeah, I would recommend this. I, you know, as a girl or whatever, you know, I thought it was funny. I thought it was entertaining. And I'm not a big superhero person. I didn't know a lot about the movie. But if you're an Alec Baldwin fan or a superhero comic fan, this should entertain you.
Nice.
Yeah.
A couple of my last notes. It was like the look of 1940s New York City back in the 90s versus how New York City is portrayed, like a legitimate 1940s. I kind of like the comic booky pulp fiction feel of New York City from the 90s as opposed to like if you watch Public Enemies.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, that's what real New York looks like, you know, not romanticized like it is in the shadow. So if you're looking for that kind of stuff.
Because it does do a good job of kind of taking those comic book pages from the comic and putting it on screen to look how they would have animated it. I mean, the streets are all rain-soaked no matter what, which I thought was hilarious.
Of course.
And, you know, it's just, it's clear that it's just almost caricature-y type Disneyland set design, which works. It's perfect for what they're trying to do.
Forget the fact that in the 1930s, everybody was jobless and probably everyone walking around with, like, silk trench coats and fedoras. But
I just love that Margot Lane was always dressed to the nines no matter what. God bless that woman. She was always dressed to the nines.
I want to live in that world. Go to a club every night and steak dinner with Jonathan Winters.
Exactly.
How can you say no to that? Jonathan Winters, another awesome aspect of the movie.
It's true. It's so outlandish in that way that it works. It's just, it's escapism at its best in a way. It's just fun. It's crazy. Probably would never happen or ever was that way, but it's fun, you know?
Right. Very, very good point. The movie also works kind of like on a serial level. Like, we watched Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, and I really enjoyed it. I think if you go back and listen to the episode, I want to say it's like episode 58. I don't know. I don't come prepared. Like these old serials that used to be in front of, like, during the 40s and 50s, like these old sci-fi serials that would take place before you go to a film, so you would see, like, I don't know, 15 minutes, and it would be like part one of five. I don't know. You know, The Shadow used to be an old radio show. I don't think those were set in serials, but the film itself kind of felt like a serial where this would happen and then they'd recover for like a second, and then something else would happen and then they'd recover for a second, and it was kind of like multiple stories that together form the movie. But this kind of that serialized feel of an entire movie was kind of cool, because that's kind of how they told stories back when there was only radio and only movie theaters and things like that.
Yeah, it's true.
There wasn't TV in everybody's house. The last part I want to... Oh, Reginald the butler. Like, where the hell did he come from? Like, his one cameo. Like, Reginald, where's Lamont? And he's like, I don't know. And he just kind of turns around. I was like, wait, there was a butler there?
No, the best was when... No one knew that there was a butler. And then I think Margot goes, you know, Margot's apparently now shacking up with Lamont.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
You got
naturally.
To. And, that, you know, the scientist's office.
Right. I mean, he had an entire wardrobe for her of decadent furs and gowns. Why was she going to leave that place? And she goes, like, tearing down the stairs and runs past Robert. And she's just like, hey, Robert. Doesn't acknowledge. I mean, she says hi to him. And then he, like, some reason, he's holding, like, this entire tea set. And he turns around and just follows her down the stairs. I'm like, what is he doing?
He's bringing tea to her. She's part of the household now.
Yeah, well, she blew right past him. The poor man, it took him, you know, he never made it into the main room where they were. And then they probably left, and poor Roger was probably walking into the main room and was like, where did they go?
Was his name Rogers or Reginald?
Reginald, I'm sorry. I have no idea.
I don't know either. We could go that. But, yeah, I mean, you said the conclusion best. You know, it is kind of a fun, interesting movie. It keeps you interested. It doesn't get boring. It doesn't get too sappy. It doesn't get too serious at any point in time. It's just like an hour and 42 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's
just like a good watch.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like one of those Van Damme movies that we always watch. It's like, yeah, it's fun to watch. You know, it's not super serious. It's not part of a greater series. You don't have to check out all five films. You just watch it. I always say it makes a good date movie because the ridiculousness of it kind of allows you to talk about things with the date.
It's true.
Instead of watching something like, you know, I don't know, what was a serious film from last year? The Descendants. I mean, that was it was fairly good, but it's very dark.
So yeah, if you want something fun and light. Exactly. Something fun and light and silly. Yeah. This would be a good movie for that.
So you suggest checking it out?
I do.
Folklore Gives are okay. I agree. It's on Instant Watch, so check it out.
Exactly.
All right, so we were talking about The Shadow, if you're just joining us. We're ending now.
You've missed it.
Now, before we get to this new game that I'm going to play with Folklore, I want to bring out the Apple II. We bring out, Allison, you know this by now, we bring out the computer. I crank it up, these old Apple II programs, they're hard to start up, put in the floppy disk, and it picks our next movie for next week. Now, Ben's not here, which means... I get to control the Apple II as I usually do, but there's no way of knowing what it's going to come out with, and Ben's just going to have to be surprised by what it produces, and we're going to have to review it next week if Ben's even available, because that League of Magicians, they're a weird bunch.
I was going to say, with that guy, his schedule, man.
We don't know where he is. We don't know what time period he's in.
It's true.
He could be an opium lord, for all we know. But let's go ahead and see what the computer has to pick for us. All right, so the Apple II is getting out. It's a little ticker tape, and we're watching. Ooh, whoa. Folklore, listen to this.
Oh, I'm not ready.
Danny Trejo stars as a machete-wielding killer, or whatever he is, in Machete. Or Machete, as fans call it. We'll be watching that. It's on DVD, okay? It's not on Instant Watch. Sometimes we switch it up a little bit so we can watch movies that were fairly popular in recent years as opposed to, like, you know, older movies. There's a couple Steve McQueen, Paul Newman movies that I want to watch in the near future. So if you do like those old movies that are on Instant Watch, we're definitely going to get back to those. But sometimes we want to switch it up and pick one that's only on DVD. So if you're a hardcore fan of the show, check that out. Perhaps you own it. And, you can watch it that way, or, you know, as long as you're not pirating anything, you're good to go. Sound good, Folklore?
I like it.
All right. So we're not playing the character name game today. Well, we are playing a new game that I kind of came up just for you. I came up with. I know you like movies. I know you like music in movies. And I know you like little things called soundtracks. We're going to play Cinematic Soundscapes, the game.
Oh, God.
I'll put theme music there. You're probably hearing it now. Okay. Cinematic soundscapes. Ben hates the term soundscapes because when we used to live together, there was this new age music choice channel on our cable. and I would listen to it while I'm doing schoolwork, and Ben would
call. I think I know what channel you're talking about.
Yeah, 434 on Bright House. And he would come home, and he would hear this new age, like, I don't know, Kitaro or like Enya would be playing, and he's like, "Dude, you're so gay." And I'm like, "Dude, this is how I think, bro. Don't mess with the brain and how it works."
Seriously, classical music, that kind of weird, crappy music, it's good music to work to because it's mellow and you can tune it out.
Yeah, and if there's words and songs while I'm trying to read or something, I can't concentrate.
No, you can't do that. No,
so cinematic soundscapes, the game. I think this is really going to take off. And let me explain to you, folklore.
Okay.
This is the game where, based on songs from the soundtrack, you get to guess the movie. So you're guessing a movie based on songs from the movie's soundtrack.
Okay.
Now, you also get bonus points for naming the soundtrack artist. So I'll give you a list of songs from the movie. If you can name the artist of any of the songs, you get bonus points. And then if you guess the movie, you win that round. I don't know. You're not playing against anybody.
playing against myself.
You win right now because I have all the answers. Now,
oh my God, I feel like this is going to discredit me. I'm going to be like, I don't know any of these.
You're playing against yourself. Now, I am allowed to give you hints as far as the year the films were released. One of the film's stars, basically the major star, and I can give you one of the soundtrack artists, depending on what you ask for. So you can't ask for hints. You can ask for the film's release date, one of the film's stars, or one of the soundtrack artists. Now, the first one is the hardest, I think.
Oh, God.
The others are going to be fun to guess, especially if you do love soundtracks, good soundtracks. You'll probably be able to guess these. So are you ready?
I am.
Okay. The first one, again, is probably the hardest. The first movie that you're supposed to be guessing has the following three songs on that soundtrack. Gimme Three Steps, Holy Roller Novocaine, and Faithfully.
Oh, I'm going to need
to now you can name artists all right off the bat if you want, but I'm looking for the name of the movie.
Oh, man, the name of the movie. Well, Faithfully, Journey, right?
Oh, yeah.
Bonus. Okay, let's make sure that's what's happening.
Plus one.
All right, plus one. I don't know if I'm going to get that. Well, Faithfully, that's a broad song.
Gimme Three Steps and Holy Roller Novocaine are the other two songs.
My God, what year did this movie come out?
The year of this movie's release was 2006.
2006.
Give me three steps.
How many hints am I allowed to get?
As many as you want. You're playing against yourself.
Oh, okay. Do I get to know the main actor in this film?
Yeah. The star of this film is Will Ferrell.
Oh, gosh. What the heck did he star in 2006?
Give me three steps. There's a pretty pivotal scene where Faithfully's played.
Oh, God.
And I think he
2006.
Says, I think he says something along the lines of, "We're about to make it like animals."
Oh, gosh, is this the ice skating movie? Blazing?
No.
Oh.
No.
Darn.
But think along
I can't remember the name of it anyway.
It wasn't professional ice skating. It was some other sport that he was spoofing.
Oh, was it Ricky Bobby?
Yeah, Talladega Nights.
Talladega Nights.
Nice. Yeah, Ballad of Ricky Bobby. Gimme Three Steps was Lynyrd Skynyrd, Holy Roller, and Kings of Leon, and of course you got Faithfully by Journey. When they're in that, I think he makes out with, was it Amy Adams?
Amy Adams in the bar.
He goes... Things are about to get pretty vicious.
Things are about to get awful or something. Like, things are about to get violent.
Right. Yeah. Nice. That was a good... I like that soundtrack. Although, not a lot of songs I recognize on their soundtrack. So, again, that was the hardest one. Okay. And you got it. Nice job.
There you go.
Now, the next three are kind of fun. I like these.
Okay.
All right. So, the next one. Round two.
Okay.
Following movie, on its soundtrack, has the songs Heart Too Hot to Hold...
Oh my God.
Fire in the Twilight.
Oh God.
And the song Don't You, parenthetical, Forget About Me. End parenthetical.
Okay, Don't You Forget About Me makes me think that we're talking about. It's like a John Hughes era.
Oh?
Oh God. What's his name? Now I'm going to name every John Hughes movie.
Don't start early, you might get it.
I mean, it wasn't 16 Candles. They didn't sing. Was it The Breakfast Club?
That is correct. The Breakfast Club. Can you name any of the artists?
Oh, gosh.
Don't You Forget About Me.
I should know who sings Don't You Forget About Me. That's one of those songs that I know, and then I'm like, who sings that?
Forget About Me.
That's right.
And then Fire in the Twilight, Wang Chung.
Oh, of course. I was like, I don't know that one.
Heart Too Hot to Hold. Yeah, I didn't know these other two songs. I know, I figured that one song would give it away, and it did.
Yeah, that did it.
Then Heart Too Hot to Hold.
It's just the best name of a song ever.
Jesse Johnson and Stephanie Spreel.
Oh.
All right, so nice job. Another, right. I'll give you plus two for that one, because it was round. So you have plus one for Ricky Bobby, plus one for Journey, plus two for round two. So you have a total of 4 out of 4 points. You're 100% right now.
Thank God.
Because I score the way I want to score.
I like it.
All right, the next movie on its soundtrack has the following songs. Blister in the Sun, Armageddon Time, and the song Take On Me.
I'm going to have to know what year this movie came out.
Year of this film's release, and it's an awesome film. If you haven't seen this movie, you need to drop everything. I'm talking to you, folks, and go watch it. The year was 1997.
Okay. I mean, Blister in the Sun is violent sounds.
Ding!
I'm trying to think. 1997?
Yeah.
If it Can't Hardly Wait?
Ooh, no.
Darn.
It's okay.
Trying to think of movies that came out in 97.
Do not lose points.
Who starred in this?
The main star would... There are a lot of stars in this, but the main star is John Cusack.
Man.
I can give you some other characters if you want.
Yeah, that might be helpful.
Minnie Driver, Jeremy Piven, Joan Cusack.
Of course, Joan. Joan and John are always in their movies together.
Jenna Elfman's in it.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to butcher the name of this movie. It's where he goes back to high school.
Yes.
Oh my god, why can't I remember the name of this movie? And he's like... Oh, this is gonna bug me. Hold on. I totally know what movie this is.
Just check the internet, it's all good.
I'm checking, hold on, okay. What the heck was this movie called?
Sometimes...
Oh, this was a good movie! I need to rewatch this movie.
What is it?
I haven't thought about this movie in forever. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Gross Point Blank.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Point Blank, a great movie where he plays an assassin who goes back to his high school reunion.
I was going to say serial killer. I'm like, that's not right. Assassin, that was it. Yeah.
And I think Joe Strummer, a lead singer for The Clash, was kind of in charge of compiling the soundtrack. And he's one of my favorite musicians. So I had to give props to this soundtrack. I thought it was really awesome. Armageddon Time, of course, The Clash, and Take On Me. Aha. I think Ben wanted to drink at a bar for hitting the note in Take On Me.
That is amazing. I am sad I was there to experience that.
That is questionable at best. I really hope he got a very, very bad shark as the drink instead of a beer. Because hitting that high note is hard to do.
Was it before he hit puberty, hopefully?
No. Past puberty.
Impressive, Ben.
All right, so plus one for a Gross Point Blank. And plus 17 for getting violent femmes.
Yeah.
The final round four, okay?
Okay.
This movie, a very popular independent film, has the following songs on this soundtrack. Forever Young, The Promise, and the song We're Going to Be Friends.
Oh, God.
Very all fairly popular songs.
Now, I'm assuming this is Forever Young by Rod Stewart.
No, actually.
Okay, see that.
Oh, that's a good joint.
It's a tell.
Yeah, because he sings a song, very popular song. I think the same title.
Yeah.
Not the one I'm referring to.
Okay. What year did this movie come out?
The year was 2004.
And who was in it?
Forever Young! the star was none other than John Heder.
Oh, Lord. Napoleon Dynamite.
Correct! Napoleon Dynamite.
Wait, who sang Forever Young for Napoleon Dynamite?
Forever Young was that Alphaville song.
Alphaville, I was going to say Alphaville, okay.
I want to be forever young.
I do like that.
Do you really want to be forever? Some rapper did
Jay-Z, right?
It was Jay-Z, yeah, he did Forever Young remix.
Yeah, he did a little remix.
It was actually really good.
It was, I was into it.
Usually don't like remixes. And then, of course, Promise, When in Rome.
Yes.
Also a great song. And We're Going to Be Friends, The White Stripes.
Oh, yes, of course.
It plays at the beginning.
Yes.
So you got Napoleon Dynamite. Great job. I'm going to give you,
thank you,
plus, I'm going to say 20,000 points.
Yes.
So out of a total of, I was planning 100 points, you got like well over 20,000.
Yeah. Well, I am the musical genius. Okay.
Why they call you folklore, because what you do is folklore. So that was Cinematic Soundscapes, the game. And I plan
like
to only play
lot.
It when you are guesting.
Good. I was going to say, this is my game.
Your game, and you dominated. Nice job.
Thank you.
If you like that game, or if you like The Shadow, or if you like anything we've talked about on this episode, which I think is one of the best episodes we've ever done here, send us an email. notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, or you can give us a call, leave a voicemail. I'm talking to you, Alec Baldwin.
Seriously, Alec, come on.
Here's the thing. You can call us at 904-469-NJNM or 6566. Notice how we did that? Right now I should be going over listener emails, but we haven't gotten any in a while, and I'm calling out to you, fans of the show. We know you're out there. We love hearing from you. You can write in every week if you want. There's no limit. It's like presidential vetoes or presidential pardon. You can do it as many times as you want. You can always send us an email. You can follow us on Twitter. We have a new Twitter follower, and their name is Lori O.F. Markey.
Hey.
Or Lori Markey is now following us on Twitter, so thanks for the follow there. I usually run the Twitter, so if you ever talk to the NJNM podcast, we're at NJNM podcast. You'll probably be talking to me. If you want to talk to Ben, and if you look at the description, I know most people want to talk to Ben. No jealousy.
That's not
there.
True, Tyler. You have fans too. I'm a fan. I'm a Tyler fan.
But Ben is the more knowledgeable about movies than I am. You can look at the beginning. He is at Ben Pierce. But we'll talk about him in a second. If you want to listen to all of our episodes, they're all available at notjustnewmovies.com. If you go to the archive, the podcast tab, it'll take you to all the links to the separate articles that they're posted on notjustnewmovies.com. If you go to the direct download tab, those you can right-click, save as, and download them on your computer and put them on your iZunes or whatever those are called nowadays. Even on your smartphones, I believe that's a popular phrase.
I think that's what the kids call them.
Yeah, iTunes is kind of giving us trouble. So if you are subscribed to us from iTunes, you probably haven't gotten any updates recently, which means you're probably not listening to this episode, so it really doesn't matter why I'm explaining it. But we should have that fixed soon. We need to cross RSS feeds with somebody and like fix the wires and like cut the blue one or the red one, depending on if we can see colors at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless you're colorblind.
Yeah.
A little nod back to the Shadow. Everybody.
Shadow reference, people.
There's a lot of intrigue and suspense with the comedy.
But if you are on iTunes, and if we ever get our iTunes page working, please leave us a review. We have a couple of reviews right now. There was a recent one a couple months ago, and we appreciate any feedback, positive, negative, neutral, whatever. We like talking to you guys. We like talking about movies to anybody. And you can check us out on Facebook as well under the if you just type in Not Just New Movies Podcast, you'll probably find us on Facebook. Now, our graciously attended guests here, Folklore, thanks for coming.
Oh my gosh, you're so welcome. I love coming on the show.
It was very last minute. I got the call from the League of Magicians on Saturday. I was on my own. I panicked. But then I said, you know what? Folklore, she's got my back.
Folklore will be on it. Folklore will survive the Oscars and still stay up to watch The Shadow. And I was happy. I was happy I did. Cause
and it
washed
wasn't like... Go ahead.
I was going to say, it washed the taste of the Oscars right out of my mouth. It's very, very nice.
Yeah, and it wasn't like... And I was trying to be weird. It was like, oh, yeah, I know Lauren would show up. It's like, I wanted to talk to Folklore. So I seeked out Folklore.
I wanted Folklore's opinion on this movie.
She was so good on G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra, Weekend of Bernie's 1 and 2, that I need her back for The Shadow. They have no relation whatsoever.
It's okay.
But for those of you that are interested in Alison Loring and what she does and what she writes about and how she does all of that stuff, where can we find you on cyberspace?
You can find me on the interwebs weekly, if not more so sometimes, at filmschoolrejects.com, writing my weekly column, Oral Fixation, spelled A-U-R-A-L. Yes. Well, play on words there, you know. Talking about all things music and movies. And you can also catch my writing at realvixen.com every so often. As Tyler mentioned at the beginning, Cineboobs also. have all sorts of inappropriately titled.
No, it's all good. They should be proud of their bodies and name websites after them.
You know. And then you can always follow me and find me on Twitter at Allison Loring. Simple, easy.
There nice. You go. That's Allison with two L's.
Two L's, yes. Thank you for pointing that out.
Very cool. Still waiting on that Movinos podcast that you and Urban are supposed to start.
Urban and I are in very intense and passionate litigation about that, but it is going to happen. As everyone who listened to the Weekend at Bernie's podcast, when this idea was brought to our attention, we were in the middle of a very intense cat-hobo-cat fight that we're still
cat
trying
to... Cat-slash-hobo, yeah.
Cat-slash-hobo fight that broke out in the middle. And we're trying to, you know, settle that and then get into the Movinos thing, but it's on our minds, Tyler. It's
telling you, executive producer right here. I'll edit it for you. All you guys have to do is talk. I'll handle the rest. The world needs to hear this.
All right. I agree. 2012, Movinos is going to happen.
Woo!
You heard it here first.
I'm doing the Breakfast Club fist raise.
Yes.
Freeze frame. nice. Thank you for joining us again. Ben, if you want to look and hear about his League of Magician adventures.
Poor Ben.
You can find him at twitter.com/BenPears, P-E-A-R-S. You can find him writing at geektyrant.com. He writes for firstshowing.net. Is that the correct website, Folklore?
It is indeed. It is.
Okay.
It's a new gig for Ben, so go check him out over there.
Yeah, I leave comments. You should, too. You can even kind of address Ben directly. I think he'll respond to that, or you could just, you know, criticize his article. I don't care.
That's what people do for me, guys. So
yeah, he needs those hits so that he gets more money. I think that's
exactly.
He also writes reviews for Filmonic.com. He writes reviews, obviously, for his own site, notjustnewmovies.com. You can find him on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. You can also see him on Geek Tyrant. So if you just click his name, a lot of his posts come up. He talks a lot about, like, when he goes and sees, like, special shows in L.A., like the one where they did Reservoir Dogs live read. He wrote about that. So he does a lot of cool stuff. So
he
check
never
it out.
Writes me. I just want the world to know. I live in L.A. with Ben.
Well, he beats you in tennis. That's.
I can't talk about playing tennis. Everyone should know Ben is a phenomenal tennis player. He's going to be so embarrassed I'm bringing this up. He kicks my butt every time we play. It's ridiculous. Tyler doesn't think so, but I do.
I'm more of the popcorn server where I like hit it real high. It's like aggressive lob into the box.
Yeah.
So I'm more of a fundamentalist kind of guy.
Yeah. I'm figuring him out though, Tyler. I will tell you that. I took some games off of him last week when we played.
Aim for the lane.
Get him I just try to make him run a lot so then he gets tired and then I win.
you can find me on NJNM podcast March Movie Madness at notjustnewmovies.com. Now,
what?
We're, I don't know how long we are, 48 hours away, a little, maybe 72 hours away from March 1st.
Yeah, don't forget, guys, it's leap year day, something. We get an extra day in February 29th.
Yeah.
What was it, 30 Rock and Alec Baldwin taught us, you have to wear blue and yellow or you get like punched in the face.
Blue and yellow at the same time?
Blue and yellow, that's what 30 Rock taught me. Otherwise, Jim Carrey comes running at you shirtless, dressed like Father Christmas or something. I don't really know what was going on in that episode.
Okay, that works. I personally, I haven't decided whether I'm going to do March Movie Madness or not, but if you send enough emails, if you send enough voicemails, if you send enough Twitter messages, I'm probably going to do it anyway, but that's really going to help me in my decision. That means every movie, I think I'm the only one going to be doing it this year.
I'm going to tweet
it. It's weird because it's not my website. But I watch.
It might be now.
Yeah. It's something that I like to do because I really like watching a lot of movies that are in my Netflix queue that I never have seen before.
Yeah.
And so I use March to watch all these ridiculous, retarded movies that I have stored up, and I write reviews about them. So not only does it improve my writing, sometimes it also gives me a chance to kind of work on my writing using these ridiculous movies. So I'm probably going to do it, and that's up for your guys' enjoyment at notjustnewmovies.com in March, so look out for that. Other than that, again, Folklore, thanks for coming on.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. Anytime, seriously.
Come back soon. Movinos.
Oh, I will. Movinos is happening.
Okay. Music for our show is provided by The Shadow Soundtrack with the song Original Sin performed by Taylor Dane. And you may see a little Easter egg at the beginning of this episode, so enjoy that. Other than that, I'd like to thank our guests. I'd like to thank Alec Baldwin for possibly calling in someday. And we'll be seeing you next week with Machete, starring Danny Trejo. Take care, guys. Bye.